Artes scientias qui liberales favere, grande curte est munus. Eustem igiter muneris, tanquam consortes, Musae Britannici gubernatores, bibliothecarii qui, presidenti et sociis, Societatis Philosophicae Americanae, salutem plurimam dicunt, perpetuitatem rerum faustalum exoptent, ut bibliotheca fructuose, et in omni aevum opus suum efficiat precanta.
It is as beautiful as it sounded, as you see. Thank you again. The Very Reverend Anselm Abelarda of the Order of Saint Benedict is the prefect of the Vatican Library, as he has been for 22 years. Saint Benedict of Nursia, of the 5th and 6th centuries of our era, established the monastery and library of Monte Cassino, which for centuries was the principal center for the religious and intellectual life of Western Europe. From Monte Cassino went forth Saint Augustine and his companions in 596, carrying their monachism with them to England, with all the consequences that flowed from that gentle invasion. The establishment of schools, the advancement of letters and learning, these were the principal tenets of the rule of Saint Benedict, and the abbot Albareda is in that tradition. Indeed, as my wife and I came to know the abbot in Rome last September, it seemed to us that like him must have been that 7th century English Benedictine, the Venerable Bede, the father of English history and the most gentle and shy of men. He was not called the Venerable Bede because he lived to be a great age, but because he was so much venerated. And in this sense, I give you the Venerable Anselm Albareda, who will convey to us the greetings of the Apostolic Vatican Library, founded in 1369. And in your native Spanish, I now say, ahora tiene usted la palabra, the abbot Albareda.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, it is with the great personal pleasure that I am able to bring to you the greetings of the Vatican Library. And I feel very honored indeed to have been invited by your president, Dr. Henry Allen Moe, to participate at the dedication of your society's new library. I am well aware of the importance of your library, whose manuscripts and books make it one of the most important in your field of interest and activity. In many ways, the Vatican Library has been long associated with cultural institutions in the United States. When, in the year 1930, the former prefect of the Vatican Library, Achille Ratti, who later became Pope Pius XI, planned to replace the old shelves of the library with new ones, a company of Chicago was asked to supply them. Our library was the first in Europe to use the rational American system of shelving books. And, if I am not mistaken, also the first in Europe to put at the disposal of scholars a machine to read microfilms. This microfilm reader came also from your country. In more recent years, we have established a kind of cultural bridge between the United States and the Vatican Library. Microfilms reproducing more than 30,000 manuscripts have been sent to St. Louis University, and we, in turn, have received a copy of the famous Index of Christian Art for Princeton University. This, then, represents a curious contrast. While several thousand of manuscripts contained mostly texts of classical and Renaissance pagan authors came to America from the library of the popes, from the United States, an enormous quantity of reproductions of Christian art were sent to the Vatican. But even stronger and clearer connections have been established in the last years. Scholars of every part of the United States, belonging to many institutions, foundations, and societies, among which I am happy to mention above all the American Philosophical Society, come to the Vatican Library, where they receive the warmest possible welcome. Presenting once more my sincerest congratulations to the Society in the name of the Vatican Library, may I express the heartfelt hope that this new library may reach not only the same reputation, but also the same age of the Vatican Library.
As you see, it also is very beautiful. Executed by the Abbot Alboreda's own calligraphers and illuminators in the Vatican Library. And after the good abbot has signed it, I shall turn it over to Dr. Shryock as one of our treasured possessions. Thank you very much. To Dr. Nicholas B. Wainwright, as president of the Library Company of Philadelphia, we give our very special thanks. All manner of cooperation has come from him and from the Library Company during our years of planning and building our new library, including permission to have copied, insofar as that was possible, and reconstructed when necessary, the excellingly good statue of Benjamin Franklin, which now stands over our main entrance, as the original did over the Library Company's door. Mr. Louis Island, Jr., who is here tonight with his wife, was our sculptor, working from Lazzarini's original. And it is worth noting that when the Lazzarini work was being trucked to Mr. Island's studio, children stopped, looked, recognized, smiled, and called out, "Hi, Ben." Such a man who made such a permanent impress was our founder and yours, Mr. Wainwright. We are more than happy in our joint founder, and on this cheerful note, I ask you please for the formal greetings of the Library Company of Philadelphia. Mr. Wainwright.
Dr. Moe, members of the Philosophical Society, and guests. Sharing with you the tradition that has just been suggested of our mutual founder, Benjamin Franklin, the Library Company always takes a great interest in whatever the Philosophical Society does. And we are very proud of their many eminent accomplishments. In the case of the new building that has been discussed, our normal interest has become one of excitement. We have watched your library grow on the site of our old library. And we feel that in your new library, a part of our past is mirrored because your new library is partially a replica of our old library. We occupied our library here for 90 years. And then, following the westward drift of the residential section of Philadelphia, we moved up towards Broad Street. Perhaps in retrospect, we should not have done this, but who knows? We do feel that libraries should not be restless, that there should be a peaceful sense of permanence about them. And it is particularly in this regard that the Library Company of Philadelphia congratulates the Philosophical Society, because we feel absolutely certain that the Philosophical Society will occupy its new library hall for all time. Thank you.
Mr. Wainwright, your wishes to that effect mean a great deal to us. Dr. Lingelbach, you are next. And I shall not presume to introduce you, without whom there would be no new library hall. Dr. Lingelbach.
President, I have the honor to unite with Mr. Sidney Martin, our distinguished architect, to present the Library of the Philosophical Society's new library hall to you as president. Our new building, in which are now housed our priceless collections of books and manuscripts, once occupied, as you've just heard, the site of the old library of the Library Company of Philadelphia. Our library, with its wonderful, new, lovely new garden dedicated to Thomas Jefferson, occupies a very privileged location, assured to the society in perpetuity by an act of Congress known as Public Law 497 of the 82nd Congress on the sole proviso that we maintain our library in it. Located here in the heart of Independence National Historical Park, the Library Hall provides a much needed basis for the expansion beyond the confines of Philosophical Hall of the activities of the oldest and increasingly vital scientific and learned society of America, giving unique value to the monumental character of the area and additional significance to our faithful reconstruction of a building with rare historic and architectural distinction. During more than two centuries here in Old Philadelphia, and especially in its long search for a permanent home for its library, the American Philosophical Society developed a strong sentiment of loyalty for Independence Square and its environs. The Society's decision to remain here in its historic setting imposed important obligations of a civic and patriotic nature in relation to the growing concern during and after World War II for the nation's heritage and the conservation of its cultural resources. The Society's first response was to put its own house in order by removing the incongruous third story superimposed on Philosophical Hall in 1890 to accommodate his library. The restoration of the hall brought it again into harmony with the charm and dignity of the Independence Group, square group of buildings. Not so well known, however, is the Society's share in the redevelopment and conservation of historic Philadelphia in general, out of which there gradually emerged the plan to reconstruct Library Hall. But that is too long a story for this evening, save to mention in passing the organization in our hall of the Independent Hall Association, the civics group which did so much to promote the redevelopment of this section of our city. In conclusion, Mr. President, I want to emphasize especially that our new library, with its handsome new building and great collections, its constructive program for research, and above all, its new leadership, represents, as nothing else could do in so concrete a manner, Franklin's profound faith in the dynamic power of ideas. Ideas, the role of human knowledge in human affairs, combined with a realistic concern to the end of his life for the dissemination of knowledge by means of books and libraries. Both Philosophical Hall and Library Hall, I wish you to note, were the direct result of Dr. Franklin's activities. To you, sir, and to your successors in the illustrious line of our presidents, we entrust Library Hall of the American Philosophical Society held in Philadelphia for promoting useful knowledge, founded by Benjamin Franklin, one of America's first and still its foremost patron of libraries. Thank you.
Dr. Lingelbach, I urge you, historian that you are, to leave a record of all those of our membership and others whose heads and devotion and practical experience and munificence and skill in negotiation made our new library hall a reality. It is beyond my knowledge to do so myself, for I had no part in it except to vote aye for appropriations. One name, however, must be mentioned and mentioned tonight, and that is Dr. William J. Robbins, whom I had the honor to succeed as president and is now our executive officer. Dr. Robbins, you have been the indispensable man ever since Library Hall was begun. And now I have the pleasure of calling upon Mr. Sidney Martin, the artist who was the architect of our new library building. Mr. Martin.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, a letter addressed to us from Dr. Lingelbach indicating that we were going to be given the responsibility to design your building was dated January 14th, 1952. And during those 6 years that The program blew hot and cold, and many opinions changed as to what it should be and what it should not be. We always had the strong hand of Dr. Lingelbach, never losing his vision and point of view as to what he ultimately wanted to see on that great site. Mrs. Hess, who was there with him at all times, shared with us the heat of the day during those 6 years prior to the taking of estimates. I don't know how much you know about the background of this building, and a word or so may not be amiss. It was designed by Dr. Thornton, a medical doctor who had turned architect, and among his other great accomplishments architecturally was the winning of the competition for our national capital in Washington. The research that we did first to try and unearth perhaps some drawings or something that would give us a definite clue as to exact sizes and motives of this building proved very little. In the files of the Philadelphia Library Company, we did find an insurance map that indicated the overall dimensions of the first floor. We found no measured drawings that would give us a definite clue as to the size of the brick, the story heights, and whatnot that an architect usually wants to have to get started. But in the files of the bulletin, we did find some faded photographs that had probably been taken just shortly before the building had been demolished. We blew them up to considerable size, and with magnifying glasses, were able to determine a good deal as to the detail of the building. We also became convinced that it was built of brick of the same size as Philosophical Hall across the street, and the second bank of, or the Old City Hall at Fifth and Chestnut. Those buildings, one had been built the year before and the year after, and we measured those buildings very carefully as to the size and exactness of the brick, and studying them in relation to the photograph we had of the library hall, we arrived at a certain scale which we carried out throughout. How accurate it is, I don't know, but it seems to look like the building that is in the photograph. Now, in closing, I want again to thank Dr. Lingelbach and Mrs. Hess for the wonderful support they gave us all the way through. I want to thank Dr. Robbins, who came on the scene about the time we were taking estimates, and through whose practical approach to problems that had been controversial, we soon seemed to be steered on the right course. And lastly, I want to thank my good friend John Cornell, whose splendid organization has built for your society, sir, a building that should endure beyond the vision of those of us who are present. And in closing, I give you this little key as a key to the building. It's only little in appearance. It's large in efficiency because it will unlock every lock in the building. I thank you, sir.
Mr. Martin, it's good to have this master key in my possession, but I shall turn it over to Dr. Shryock, who will have the creative management of the building you created and the creative management of its contents. For the rest this evening, ladies and gentlemen, I shall let Dr. Franklin speak for me. According to the minute book of the Philadelphia Library Company, of July 13th, 1741, B. Franklin read a paper containing a brief account of the library, which he said he wrote to fill a blank that happens to be at the end of a catalog he is printing, by which he desired the opinion of the directors present, and they approved of his design. And Dr. Franklin concluded his brief account. It is now 10 years since the company was first established, and we have the pleasure of observing that though 'tis composed of so many persons of different sects, parties, and ways of thinking, yet no differences relating to the affairs of the library have arisen among us, but everything has been conducted with great harmony to general satisfaction, which happy circumstance will, we hope, always continue. And so do we also hope for our new library hall. Dr. Franklin did not live to see the library company's building completed in 1790, the year he died. But until his death, he had a part in everything connected with it, even to the inscription on the cornerstone. For the following is recorded in the minutes of September 3rd, 1789, meeting of the Philadelphia Library Company. The building committee reported that the first stone of the edifice was laid on the 31st of August last, and that upon the suggestion of Dr. B.F., a large stone was prepared and laid at the southwest corner of the building, with the following inscription, composed by the doctor, except so far as related to him, which the committee have taken the liberty of adding to it. Be it remembered, in honor of the Philadelphian youth, then chiefly artificers, that in 1731 they cheerfully, at the instance of Benjamin Franklin, one of their number, instituted the Philadelphia Library, which, though small at first, is become highly valuable and extensively useful, and which the walls of this edifice are now destined to contain and preserve. A building of the quality of Dr. Thornton's should have lasted longer than from 1790 to 1884, and we hope that ours will fare better. For our library too, has become highly valuable and extensively useful, and we have built a building destined, we hope, to contain it and preserve it through many centuries, during which, under God, and supported by an act of the Congress of the United States, in the heart of our country's Independence National Park, in Dr. Franklin's city of Philadelphia, we shall continue our work of promoting useful knowledge. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are due at the American Philosophical Society's new library hall, and this meeting is adjourned.